is Drifting Continents in a Changing World, the Story of Plate Tectonics. And so what I'd like to do today is give you a brief description of what plate tectonics is and continental drift, but also talk about some of the evidence for that. I think that's really important to see why scientists think that plate tectonics describes what's going on in the Earth. And if we have time, I'd like to end up by talking a little bit more specifically about the state of Washington and some of the recent tectonic history there. Now, what's really important in all this is that if you have questions about anything I say, if I use a word you don't understand, or if you just want me to explain something in more detail, make sure you like wave me down or say Heather or something like that, because I can easily do that.
What's the subject again?
Okay, it's plate tectonics.
Okay.
What does that mean? Tell us.
I'm going to tell you that. So let me turn on the slides, because it's a lot easier to see these things with slides. Okay, the first thing I wanted to do is just real briefly give you an overview, which I think will probably be a review of what the Earth is made of, really, in terms of its structure. And there are three main parts of the Earth. So think in your mind of the core, which is the center part, what's called the mantle, and the crust. And you don't even need to remember those names, but just think there's like a division. And just to get your mind thinking about the scale of different things, the radius of the Earth from the center to the outside is about 6,000 kilometers. So the crust is only a very small part of that, maybe a few 7 to 10 to maybe 50 or 60 kilometers in thickness. So a way to think about that is think of like an apple. And the skin on an apple is similar to the crust of the Earth. So there's a lot inside that we're not even going to begin to talk about today. Now, if we look at this another way, the crust and part of the upper mantle are fairly rigid and brittle, okay? And so they're very, well, I'll say it again, they're very rigid and they act as very much as solids. The part of the upper mantle right underneath that is able to flow a little bit. Now, it's still a rock. The way I think about it, it's more like taffy or a Tootsie Roll, that if you break it quickly, it will break. But if you bend it slowly, it will actually be able to move. And this brings me to what plate tectonics is. The idea or the theory of plate tectonics is that the Earth's outer shell or the outer part of the Earth consists of a number of plates. These are rigid, brittle plates that are all over the surface of the Earth. And they're made up of the crust and then part of the upper mantle. And these each plate moves as a unit over the surface of the Earth. And so where it comes in contact with another plate is where you'd expect the action to take place, where you'd expect volcanoes, earthquakes, mountain building, things like that. Okay? Now, this theory of plate tectonics is a fairly recent theory and really was proposed in the early 1960s, which for some people isn't recent, but it still seems pretty recent to me. Now, you might think that this idea that these plates have been moving around is not a new concept. And in fact, there's an older concept, the idea of continental drift, that's been around a lot, much longer time. And that's the idea that the continents moved. Okay, now people a long time ago even thought of this. In the 1600s, some people noticed a similarity in the shape of Africa and South America. And you'll see that here, where it looks like they just fit right next to each other. So what I'm going to do in the next few slides is show you the evidence that has people recognized for a long time about the fact or the idea that the continents themselves have been moving through geologic time. Okay, and this was a very popular theory in the early 1900s, this idea of continental drift, or that these continents drifted over the surface of the Earth. And one line of evidence is the fact that the shapes of certain continents are very similar to, or one edge is very similar to the edge of another continent. And the easiest way to see that is really to look at South America and Africa. And you can just imagine, it looks like they were once together, and then now they split apart. If you try to look at the rock types, and the ages of different rocks, and the different structures of the rocks, they also seem to match up. So it's not just the shape of the continents, it's the geology or the underlying rock types that are similar. You can see these orange ones match up. There's a little sliver of this green rock in South America that's very similar to that in Africa. Okay, so the jigsaw puzzle fit of the continents suggests they were once together and now they've moved apart. And also the similarity in rocks on different continents also suggests that. Now, another line of evidence to support the idea that the continents moved over time is to look at fossils. And there are a number of different kinds of fossils that help or provide evidence that certain continents were once right next to each other. In this slide, which looks pretty complicated, I'll just go through, say, one. This fossils of a certain kind of fern that have fairly large seeds. And that's found in South America, in Africa, in India, Australia, and Antarctica. And this kind of plant has that seed, and it's really difficult to see or imagine how it could be blown from one continent to another if they were in the places they are today. You wouldn't really expect to have exactly the same kinds of plants, of this particular plant, on those continents. You can use a similar argument for certain kinds of reptiles, freshwater reptiles, that they find these on two continents that today are widely separated, and the way you can explain that is if they were once together. Now, there actually are other possible explanations, so I don't want to give you the impression that the similarity in fossils can only be explained by the continents being right next to each other. It turns out that that really is the best conclusion you can draw from that, but there were other suggestions made at this time in the early 1900s. Now, another thing that was puzzling was when people looked at glacial deposits of a long time ago. And they looked at them again on these southern continents, and it looked as though the glaciers moved from the land onto the sea. I mean, from the sea onto the land. Okay, it looked like that. And same over here, and in India as well. It looked as though the glaciers moving from the oceans onto the land. Well, if you think of glaciers today, they don't do that. They go from land areas down slope, and eventually some may connect with and flow into the ocean. So this was puzzling. How could you explain this? And if you put those continents back together like this, it makes more sense. If South America and Africa were once connected, then the glaciers could have started in the center part and then flowed out onto the land that was next to them. Okay? And there are other kinds of paleoclimatic evidence that suggests that the continents were in different positions than they are today. You know, some areas may have coal deposits that have a tropical fauna and flora, and now they're in very cold regions. There are other kinds of evidence similar to the where you might expect to find glaciers that support the idea that the continents moved. Now, all these lines of evidence people knew about in the 1900s. But One problem with this theory of continental drift, the idea that the continents were moving, is that they couldn't really come up with a good explanation for why they moved, or how could they move. Some ideas were the continents moved kind of as rafts in the ocean. But that really wasn't very convincing. So the lack of a really good mechanism to explain these continents moving over the surface of the Earth was a real problem. And so in the kind of teens of the 19-teens and 1920s, this theory of plate tectonics pretty much died down. So because of this lack of a driving mechanism, this is one cartoon that suggests how you might have continents moving through time, but there was no real well-accepted idea. Now so the theory of continental drift, nobody really paid too much attention to it in the 1930s to the 1950s. And then people started thinking about it again based on some new ways of looking at rocks. Now this is a slide that shows, in a sense, the magnetic field of the Earth. And you don't have to really look at all the details of it, but the Earth has a magnetic field, and that's important to remember, okay? And at different positions relative to the equator, the direction of the field is slightly different. Now you can look at this compass needle, and at the equator, it's parallel to the surface of the Earth. And then at the poles, it's pointing either straight down or straight up, depending on whether you're in the North Pole or the South Pole. Okay? And what they found is in looking at certain kinds of rocks, a lot of igneous rocks, when igneous rocks cool, they acquire the magnetic field at the time they cool below a certain temperature. So what's important about that is that they preserve what the Earth's magnetic field was like at the time they formed. And you can get a sense, well, you can figure out at what latitude they were when the rocks, these igneous rocks, formed. And that's one important thing to remember, that igneous rocks, when they cool below a certain temperature, and igneous rocks are those that form from a hot magma or molten rock, when they cool, they lock in the Earth's magnetic field at that time. And so you can figure out at what latitude that particular rock was at the time it formed. Now the other thing to note is that on this diagram, the lines of magnetic force are going down towards the North Pole. They're going down like towards the center of the Earth. At the South Pole, they're going out, away from the Earth. And that too is preserved in those igneous rocks. So in the 1950s and early 60s, what they started doing was measuring the paleomagnetism of these rocks. And what they found was that it looked as though the North magnetic pole just went all over the place. Look at all these red arrows. It looks like the magnetic pole moved over here. It just looked like it was moving everywhere. And these are called apparent polar wandering curves. It looked as though the magnetic pole just moved all over the place. Now, we know that the Earth's magnetic pole shifts a little bit, wobbles a little bit, but pretty much it stays in the same place. And so the way you can account for this sort of evidence that looks as though the pole is just shifting all over the place, it's different for different continents, is to say, well, what if that pole didn't move so much? Instead, let's say that the continents are moving. So if the continents move through time, then, and I didn't include this slide, but there's another slide that shows them all pointing towards the same magnetic pole. So looking at the magnetism that's locked in at the time these rocks are formed, you can get a sense of how the continents shifted through time. Okay, and this was one real important line of evidence that, again, made people start thinking about these continents and moving over the face of the Earth. Now, another thing that they found is in looking at layers of basalt flows, which are just lava flows on land, when they looked at them, they found that some had a polarity similar to that of today, where that, remember that compass needle, it was pointing down towards the North Pole. Okay, some rocks had that. But then there were sequences of rocks that had the opposite polarity. If you put a compass needle at the time they formed, it would have been pointing up at the North Pole. So what they saw in rocks on land was that there were shifts, there were reversals of the Earth's magnetic field. So it went normal, reverse, normal, reverse, normal, reverse. And people, they did this. Then what some people did, and this was actually done during World War II, and they looked at the data later, is they dragged magnetometers, which measure the Earth's magnetic field, all over the ocean, lots and lots and lots of different places. And they found a pattern of magnetic anomalies where the Earth's magnetic field was higher than usual or lower than usual. And they mapped this out and they saw a pattern of stripes on the Earth's under the oceans. And the important thing to recognize about this is that the pattern is symmetrical. You see something in the center, and then you see the same sequence of units on both sides of that. So they had to figure out, well, how could they explain this? And this was a really kind of amazing explanation that really changed the way we think of the Earth. And what they suggested is that the sea floor spread. Now, what you have to remember, and I'll explain that, but up until this time, people, like world-famous geologists, wrote papers saying the rocks underneath the ocean are really old. They're the oldest rocks there are. And rocks on the continents tend to be younger. So people's ideas were that the ocean was old, or the rocks underneath that, they were very stable. You know, no action took place underneath the surface of the ocean. And that's the concept of seafloor spreading really changed that. And that is the idea that at certain places in oceans, you have new lava or new hot rock being formed, and it extrudes out onto the ocean floor. And when it cools below that temperature, that certain temperature, it will acquire the magnetic field of the Earth at the time it formed. And so when the Earth's magnetic field reversed, that was reported in these rocks. So that builds up this striped pattern of units. I think I'll skip that. Okay, look at this slide. And what this shows you is where you have new volcanic rocks formed in the ocean floor. And what you'll see that in this brown band, look at that, this is where newly formed igneous rock, basalt, has been formed on the ocean floor. So that suggests there must be something happening there. Now this is a cartoon that really shows what plate tectonics is. And so I'll spend a little bit of time explaining that. Now, what you see on the very top layer are these plates, the lithospheric plates. And at this, right at this place in the middle of the ocean floor, new crust is being formed. Okay, so you have lots of volcanic activity. And it actually forms a mountain range that's in the center or in the middle of some oceans. So you have lots and lots of volcanic activity. New crust is being formed there. After it's formed, it's moved away. It spreads away from the center of that particular area. Okay? And so this one plate, it's formed here, it moves away and keeps spreading away. So this is one kind of plate boundary where you have two plates and they're spreading apart from each other. It's called a divergent plate boundary. Now think of what's going on. You can't have that take place, you know, everywhere, or you'd have an expanding Earth. And it would just keep growing larger and larger and larger. So imagine in your mind that you have these thin plates that are on the surface of the Earth and they're moving away from each other. At some point, what may happen is one plate may move underneath another. And let's look over here. See, here's one plate, and then here's another plate. And this one plate is moving down underneath the other plate. Okay, so if I just show you with my hands. So a spreading center, or where the plates are moving apart, it moves like this. Your hands move like that. Okay, look now, if they're coming together, one plate may be subducted and dive down underneath another plate. Okay? Now, does that make sense to you? Okay.
How fast?
How fast? It depends. If, let me go back to this slide. This is a slide that, in a way, is similar to the other one I showed you. It shows the age of different volcanic rocks that were formed at these spreading centers. Okay, and let's just look at, say, this orange color. Okay, and those are rocks that are 5 to 25 million years old. If you look here in the Atlantic Ocean, that band of orange is kind of thin compared to the band of orange here in the Pacific Ocean. And so these rocks were formed in the same time interval during about 18 million years. And it forms a band this thick in the Atlantic Ocean that's a lot thicker in the Pacific Ocean. The Atlantic Ocean is spreading at maybe a few centimeters per year. Whereas some places along in the Pacific Ocean, the spreading rate's higher, maybe up to 12 centimeters a year. In some places, 18 centimeters a year, something like that.
Then so, what would that be in inches?
Oh, okay. Well, that's hard to do. They're 2.54 centimeters an inch, so maybe an inch a year at the most in the Atlantic, maybe a couple of inches in the Pacific. So not a lot. But what you have to remember is we're dealing with huge amounts of time. Like, you know, millions of years. So even if it's an inch a year, over a million years, that's a million inches. So throughout all of the history of the Earth, you can have these large-scale movements of the continents, even though in our lifetime, it's not going to make a big difference. We won't really see much of this. They've actually, from satellites in space, been able to measure the movement of the continents from the outside place. This is based on the magnetic reversals. Okay. Now, let's look at this. This is a diagram that shows all the different plates. So remember, these are plates, and each one moves as a unit. And here's the North American plate, which includes the continent of North America and also part of the oceanic crust to the east of North America. Okay? So you have the North American plate goes to this almost the center of the Atlantic Ocean. You have the South American plate, the African plate, the Pacific plate, and look at this tiny little plate up here, the one, the Fuca plate. And that'll be important when we talk about the geology of Washington. It's a kind of small segment of a plate compared to say, this huge Pacific plate. So what you should be thinking about is what we've done is take the surface of the Earth and divide it into some maybe 13, 12, 14, something like that, fairly large units. And this plate moves as a unit. The South American plate moves as a unit. This Nazca plate moves as a unit. So you have all these plates and they're moving on a pretty much a sphere on the Earth. And so the boundaries of those plates are where the action's going to take place. Now, if you have earthquakes you might expect to form where plates are moving past each other. And I'll show you later that we have a lot of volcanic activity in a lot of these plate boundaries. Now this is the diagram of the plates. So I want you to keep that in your mind. The next slide will show you where most of the earthquakes happen, okay? And there'll be little dots. So pick, you know, in your mind, pick one plate boundary. Like maybe pick, let's do along South America, along the wet, west coast of South America. Okay, now look along the west coast of South America. See all these dots? The different colors mean different things, but just look at the dots. See how many there are all along the west coast of South America, and there are none really along the east coast. Now let's look at a place where it's not part of the continent. Look along here in the Atlantic Ocean. See all the little blue dots that just line up right almost down the center of the Atlantic Ocean. There are lots of earthquakes there. And look at, let me go back. And see where that is? That's where we say there's a ridge or a divergent plate boundary where new material is being created and it's spread away from the center on both sides. Now what I want to do is take you through and talk about the three main kinds of plate boundaries. You think just you can imagine this, where plates move apart from each other is one kind, where they move towards each other is a second kind, and the third kind is where they slide past each other. Okay? So let's first do where they move away from each other. So this we can call these rifts or mid-oceanic ridges. Some people use the term rise, like East Pacific rise. So they're spreading centers. They're where the material, the new crust that's formed is carried away from the center. And we think this, and I forgot to say this on the slide of this, but a question that you should all have been asking me is, well, the problem before was what was the mechanism for driving these continents, making the continents move? And in the slide I had, you can see that that underlying layer, the asthenosphere layer, was that with that partially molten, you could flow a little bit. That was moving in kind of giant convection cells. And these plates are just carried along on top of it. Kind of, if you can imagine, like in a supermarket, think back to away from Holden where they have supermarkets, and you put your groceries on the conveyor belt. And the conveyor belt is just cycling along, and the continents and the oceanic crust are just being carried along on top of that. Okay. So you have new material formed here, and then the plates spread away from the center. An example of that is that ridge along the center of the Atlantic Ocean. And this is a map. A slide taken from a map that is actually up in the Portal Mine Museum. So if you haven't hiked up there yet, there's a map showing the topography of the ocean floor done by Bruce Husen and Marie Tharp. And you can see that there's this giant mountain chain in the center of the ocean. And this is where the new lava is being formed. And so it's moving apart away from the center. So in this slide, Africa and South America are gradually being moved farther and farther apart. Not at a really fast rate, but they're still moving. Now, where this intersects the land is in Iceland. So Iceland's the center of a lot of volcanic activity. It's where there's a divergent plate boundary. These plates are moving apart. And there's a lot of volcanic activity, as you can see here. This is an eruption in 1973. This can be quite damaging to houses. You can see they're covered and smoking a little bit, this slide. Now, a second kind of plate boundary is where the plates come together, and that's called a convergent boundary. And there are three different kinds. I'm not going to go through all of these, but it depends on whether a continent is involved. And if you have a continent colliding with oceanic crust, the oceanic crust always loses. It's always the one that is what we call subducted. It dives down underneath the plate that has continental crust. Now, what are some of the characteristics of this? What we see is where one plate here is oceanic crust is being subducted underneath the continental plate. What happens when that plate is subducted? It goes lower into more into the interior of the Earth, and the temperature starts to rise. So what do you think is going to happen to rocks as you continue to heat them? Eventually they'll do what? They'll melt. And that's what happens. Look at this. It's saying as this plate is being subducted, it starts to melt. And it forms bodies of molten rock that may rise up a certain amount in the Earth's crust and then just stop. Or may eventually be carried all the way to the surface. So you have volcanoes, or you have what we call plutons, or just think of it as bodies of igneous rock that never made it to the surface. Now, and what we see, let me go back. Okay, another thing that can happen is right here in this sort of the core mountains that are being formed as these two continents or two plates are colliding together. You may also have metamorphic rocks formed, which some of you, if you walk around the village and look and see rocks that you see layers of dark and light colored bands, those are kind of metamorphic rock. Metamorphic rocks are formed in many cases associated with these kind of plate boundaries. You also think of what's going to happen if you have, let me get a piece of paper. Okay, think of what will happen when you have rock. Now imagine this is rock and these plates are colliding together. Okay, you're going to have folding take place. Okay, with imagine this tremendous pressure as these plates come together that actually cause the rocks to bend. So we'll see some of this. This is in the Rocky Mountains. I didn't have a picture from around here to show you. But this is where, these are granites and gneisses, both these rocks that form at depth. And now the overlying material, all this stuff has been removed by erosion and weathering and exposing this. So here are the Rockies. Here are some of the gneisses that are in the Rockies that you can see similar rocks right around here. So what is this telling us? At some time, these rocks were around Holden were formed in a mountain building event at a convergent plate boundary. When you have these kind of boundaries, you can have rocks that are folded. And here's a fold. This is actually in West Virginia. But you can see these are actually rocks and they've been folded. They're no longer flat. Now you can't actually I saw rock around the village that you can see might it folds in it. Not at this scale, but real small scale. But you can also see, looking at like the diagram in the mine museum, you can see there are layers of rocks and they're tilted. Again, think of what happened. They were deposited horizontally and now they've been tilted through some tectonic event. Okay, let's skip that slide. What can also happen is you may, instead of forming just volcanoes that are on continents, you may actually have volcanic islands form when one plate subducts below another plate. And an example of that are the Aleutian Islands, which are off the screen in this slide, so I'll skip that. Now, so those are the two kinds of plate boundaries. You have divergent boundaries, convergent boundaries, and now ones that I'm sure you've all heard about, ones that slide past each other. And the most famous kind of this kind of boundary is the San Andreas Fault System that runs through California. And this is showing just real graphically different kinds of rocks by different colors. And you can see that there's been movement where one plate has moved past the other plate. This is the North American plate next to the Pacific plate. Now there's a place, if you ever get to California, go north of San Francisco and Point Reyes, which is just a little bit north, and you can actually take an earthquake walk. And at one point you could stand on, put 1 foot on the Pacific plate and 1 foot on the North American plate. And so you're standing right on top of a plate boundary. Now, I don't have a slide of that, unfortunately, but this is a slide that shows you that there has been movement along this fault. And here's a drainage system, a river. And once that river continued down here, and now you can see it's been shifted. So once this was connected, and there's been lateral movement. Now think of what happens when you have these plates grinding past each other. Sometimes they move slowly and, you know, gradually, and you don't really even see them. And other times, they don't. And I think you all remember the big earthquake in San Francisco last year. Okay, questions on that? Because now I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Okay. Why do we do all this? I mean, what we're trying to do is understand not only the way the Earth is now and why we how we can see that where volcanoes are and explain the location of earthquakes and where you see mountains and things like that. But we also try to apply this to the past and what has been going on in terms of the geologic history of the Earth. And remember I said at the very beginning that the whole start of this was the idea that continents actually drifted. And then that theory was really incorporated into a larger theory of plate tectonics, which again said that the continents, as well as the rocks underlying the oceans, have moved through time. So this is one reconstruction of what the continents of today looked like about 530, 550 million years ago. So that's like a long time ago. And this is maybe a different kind of map than you've seen, but this is the equator. And this, I think it's got a different name to it, but this is basically North America. And so imagine, you know, your image of North America is on normal maps where north is up. Well, imagine that and rotate it about 90 degrees. And I think you can recognize sort of an outline of North America. Can you see that? Okay, so that's what they've done is combined a lot of different lines of evidence, and so that suggests that this time about, you know, 550 million years ago, North America had was rotated 90 degrees from its present position. And look at where it is relative to the equator. It's centered right on the equator. Now another thing that I think is really interesting, and you might have heard about this, is that look at where all these southern continents are. All of the southern continents, Africa, Australia, Antarctica, South America, and India, were once connected and they formed a giant supercontinent. And that was called Gondwanaland. And that stayed as a continent for hundreds of millions of years. And it moved just as a single continent. Remember those slides I showed you earlier where the ice went from, you know, one area, one continent to another continent? That happened when all these present-day continents were part of one giant continent called Gondwana Land. Now, what I could have done, but I didn't, is have a whole set of slides that showed how the continents shifted through time. But what I did is jump to 200 million years ago. And this is just showing just right after a time when all the land areas were connected, when all the southern continents and all the present-day southern continents and all the present-day northern continents were once part of the same continent. And they're spread, they're a little bit apart now, but just before this time, they were all together. And that supercontinent is called Pangaea. And Pan sort of means all, Gaea refers to land. So all the lands were once one at this time. And since that time, they've been breaking up and spreading apart.
And is 200 million years ago, is that basically what, Permian Triassic?
It's actually in the Triassic. Okay, now let's shift and get a little bit more specific about where we are in Washington. Okay, this is showing the west coast of North America. And what do we see in terms of the tectonics of this area? Here's the North American plate, here's the Pacific plate, and here's that tiny little plate that I remember I showed you before, the Juan de Fuca plate. Okay, now this, even in this small, relatively small area, you can see the three main kinds of plate boundaries. There's the San Andreas Fault where the two plates are sliding past each other, okay? And west, just west of Washington and Oregon and part, the northern part of California, there's a subduction zone or a convergent plate boundary where the Juan de Fuca plate is diving down or is being subducted underneath North America. And then what we don't see, I mean, what you don't see when, unless you know about this map, is that west of this subduction zone is that little divergent plate boundary. Okay, so this is that separating this plate from the North American plate. Okay, now let's kind of think a little bit more about what this means, the fact that the west coast of Washington is part of the subduction zone. Now remember what that means. The Juan de Fuca plate is being subducted underneath North America. Now what happens when that plate goes down and gets heated up?
It's going to melt instead of lift.
Right, it's going to melt and you'll have volcanic activity. Now what are some of the volcanoes that you know about that are along this part of the country? Mount St. Helens? What are some others?
Mount Rainier,
I flew, you might see that, or if you're driving to see, I might see them. What's one that's even closer to Holden?
Baker.
Okay, Baker, and one that's very close, maybe you haven't seen this, there's a peak called Glacier Peak. Is that what it's called then?
Mm-hmm.
And that's also a volcanic peak. It hasn't, I don't remember when it last erupted, around 6,000, 10,000 years ago, something like that. Okay, now I have some slides that show that, but this, you can understand the location of these volcanoes because of their relationship to the plate boundaries. Now, let's go back in time a little bit. And these are, the next set of slides are slides taken from a book that's in the bookstore. That's a pretty interesting book. The Roadside Guide to the Geology of Washington. The title might be a little bit different than that, but I know they have a lot of copies in the bookstore. And that's really written for lay people, and it describes the geology along some of the major highways. And at the beginning of that, it gives an overview of the geologic history of Washington. And they have these for other states as well. So this is taken from that book, and it says, this thin strip of continental crust just on the eastern part of Washington is all that existed of Washington from a billion years ago until about 100 million years ago. So throughout much of geologic time, What we now know is the state of Washington didn't exist. Okay, so let's, I'm not going to go through all the pieces, but where we are right now in the North Cascades is actually its tiny little was a tiny microcontinent. It was just a sliver of crust that was not part of North America. It came from somewhere else, and then, so imagine this, this continent is coming towards the North American continent, okay? And at this point, there's a subduction zone off the coast of Washington this many millions of years ago, just like there is today. But the North Cascades isn't yet part of North America. And this is a cross-section, so it's sort of looking at a sideways view of this. And here's North America, okay? Here's that subduction zone where the plate, tectonic plate is going down, and here's the North Cascades microcontinent. I think the North American plate is advancing this way, this is being subducted like this. When you have two continents collide, continental crust, even with the microcontinent, this will never go down, it will never get subducted, it's too buoyant. Kind of like ice cubes. You can't keep them down. So eventually that docked onto North America. Okay, so the collision between North Cascade microcontinent and North America happened about, this is about 50 million years ago. So this is what the geography of Washington might have looked like after that tiny microcontinent, the North Cascades, it's not so tiny, it extends up into Canada, but so don't think of it as tiny, but when it docked about 50 million years ago. So now you're building the state of Washington.
Just for a modern example of that, if you look at the Asian coast, you've got the mainland of places like China, but on there you've got all those island chains, the islands of Japan, the islands of the Philippines. Can you imagine smashing those onto China? That's the same kind of thing that happened. Yeah. Now there's a sea that separates them, but eventually if those smash on, you'll make the continent that much larger. That's a similar kind of thing that happened here.
Yeah. Okay. So, and then some other things happen, but we'll skip some of those, and I think I'll skip that slide too. And this is a diagram showing what it was like, more like what I actually like today, where you have this plate being subducted underneath basically North America, Washington, after that North Cascades microcontinent had been attached, and after some other things happened. Okay, and this shows really, really well that plate starts to get melted, and lava or magma rises, and it forms a series or a line of volcanic peaks, and we sometimes call those arcs because they're commonly curved along the map. And you can see, well, it doesn't show. Yeah, you can see Glacier Peak on it. There's Glacier Peak, Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens. Okay. And this again shows some of those, that series of volcanoes that form as a result of this plate subducting underneath North America. Now just a few last slides to conclude. This is Mount Shasta. These are beautiful volcanoes, really nice. And this is way the 10th anniversary of Mount St. Helens that erupted in 1980. This is what it looked like, a very, very explosive eruption. And this shows you how much of the mountain of the volcano was blown away during that eruption. Now, I have a few more slides, but I think that's where I'll stop. And if you have any questions about anything relating to plate tectonics or geology or this Washington or anything like that, I'll be happy to answer them.
What kind of time frame do you feel that the Earth has been moving from North America, South America, touching Africa
mm-hmm.
as one mass, and then starting to move apart. Mm-hmm. Are we looking at 100 billion years? Or
yeah, when or they were what? All together, probably 200 and, say 240, 250 million years ago. And they started to break apart at different times. Like some broke apart in, you know, by about 200 million years ago. Others started, broke apart from that supercontinent later. Like India, well, India, which is now part of Asia, was once a separate continent, and that's moved upward and collided with Asia. So it's very slow, but you can trace the movement, and they do it by dating different rocks and figuring out when, like, there are basalts that form when the continents split apart. Like, you can look at some of these rifting events, and they form, their faults occur in different kinds of igneous intrusions when they start to move apart. And you can look at those along the east coast of North America, and there are basins that are still preserved that form basically as North America ripped apart from some of the other continents.
What happened when the Appalachian Mountains formed?
That actually is a really interesting story. And there were actually three mountain building events that formed the Appalachians as we know them today. The first one took place, I don't know the numbers. Geologists use these things called periods to describe when events took place. And in the Paleozoic, which was about 570 million years ago to about 245 million years ago, in that time period, you had three different mountain building events that were involved in forming the Appalachians. So the first one happened early in that time period, and there was a microcontinent that attached onto eastern North America, similar to like the North Cascades to Washington. And then the second main mountain building event, Europe collided with the north part of North America. That sort of, people may not always agree about that now, but that's a classical interpretation. And then another microcontinent collided with the southern part of North America on the east coast. And then a third mountain building event is when the northern continents collided with Gondwana land. And so, and that's really the final mountain building event that formed the Appalachians. And then since that time, the continents have all split apart, and they split up along sort of the initial boundary of the continents of like North America, Europe, and Africa. Is that kind of what you're thinking about?
Yeah. What's the explanation for the eruption of the molten stuff that forms each place? Why does it
rise? It's when you have the rock and it starts to melt, it's a different density than it was before it was melted. And it's actually more complicated than that, but it tends to rise, and it keeps rising higher. It has to do with how much water is in the magma, whether it tends to cool within the crust or whether it tends to rise higher and actually extrude onto the land.
Is there any explanation for the whole shebang, that is, why the movement?
Why the movement? That's a good question, and the common explanation is that there are these convection cells that are in the asthenosphere, and there's some areas where it's just hotter somewhere in the interior of the Earth, and the asthenosphere, or that layer below the plates, that the hot part rises. And then it cools off a little bit, and it spreads to the sides, and eventually it cools enough so it drops down. So,
actually, that's a really good question, because they don't have a real good answer to that. But if you have like this, it would be hot and it would rise up here, and then on the other side of the convection cell, it cools off and goes down. So it's like, and you can model that using like water. And put a pan of water and heat up, put heat center of it, and you'll actually get water movement in this pattern. Now, another thing that can happen is that these may be related to what are called hot spots. I don't want to even say that.
Yeah, isn't basic. One of the basic ideas is that in the center of the Earth are radioactive, or there's radioactive decay going on.
That's why it heats it up.
Minerals are breaking down, which give out heat. Mm-hmm. The heat has to migrate from the center of the Earth out. Yeah. As heat migrates, it tends to set up these circular flow patterns, and that's what Heather explained. Like, you see the same thing when you heat water or heat your soup up. You'll see bubbles form on the base, and they'll flow to the top, and they'll move out towards the sides.
Right.
Is there any credence given to the notion that the formation of glaciers presses on the center?
I haven't heard.
The press on the center of the Earth?
The weight of the glacier.
Press on the crust.
It presses on the crust and actually depresses the crust, but whether it really is related to plate tectonics, I haven't heard of any.
No.
I think that relates them. Dan's right, and that's the heat source. The heat is eventually the driving mechanism. How that actually takes place is not really well established. This is the conventional view.
Somewhat like the sun that generates its own heat.
Right. There are questions about what part of the interior of the Earth is involved in this motion. And I have one slide I didn't bring with me. It shows four different views.
The whole center of the Earth is molten?
Not the whole center. If you have the Earth like this, and here's the core is about
The core.
The inner core is solid, and then the outer core is liquid. And they know that because of earthquakes. That earthquakes give off different kinds of waves. And some waves can travel through solids and liquids, and other waves can only travel through solids. So if there's an earthquake here, and it gives out, it sends out rays, some of these, let's see. If you look and say these are the kind of rays that only move through solids,
is the center of the sun solid?
I kind of don't think so. I think it's all gas, but I don't really know. But what happens here is this: if this only moves through solids, what they see at recording stations set up all over the Earth, they pick up that wave sent out from that particular earthquake. But all through here, there's no record of that earthquake ever happened. And then there's a similar argument with the other kind of waves for why the center is solid.
I don't think I understood about how we know that there's plates or how the plates. Could you just do that a little bit?
Okay. As opposed to like continents, what you're saying. What they've done is, and again, it's relating to this seismic activity, and I might be sort of not answering your question most directly, but what they can see is that there are different layers in the Earth, and the upper part of the Earth is fairly rigid, and waves can pass through it pretty quickly. Then the next layer, the waves slow down when they move through that. So, if you have So this is what we call the lithosphere. And that is hard and brittle. And waves, seismic waves move real quickly through that. Then underlying that is another part where it's called the asthenosphere, which just means a weaker layer. And waves move more slowly through that. So, and this is like a little bit complicated, but this, the hard, rigid, brittle part consists of the crust of the Earth and part of the upper mantle. And it looks as though those are acting as a unit, the crust and upper mantle, in terms of some of the physical characteristics. There definitely are differences, but it acts as a unit. Okay? And under that, it's not. Dan, you might be able to. Ask me another question that relates to this, because I don't think I'm answering your question, but I'm not.
Well, okay. You've got the continents that uh-huh. were originally the Earth. Then you've got the plates. But the plates in relation to the continent oh. are underneath there, but they are moving and there are a number of them.
Right, and what it is the continents are actually part of this lithosphere. Okay, so before it was the idea the continents just moved on top of the Earth. So here was the Earth, and you had continents that floated on top of that in a mm-hmm. sense and moved around. And that didn't make sense because you can't really have a continent plow through the rocks of the ocean. It won't work. But the new idea was that instead of the continents just moving, the continents are in a way attached to the underlying layer. And so the new view would be, here's a plate, and in part, it's got a continent on it. Looks like a little spaceship or something. And here's maybe another plate that doesn't have a continent on it. And these are what move over the asthenosphere, this kind of
mold. It's a plate without the continent on it, but it's being driven under.
Right. Right. Because the continental crust is, I mean, we don't think of it as light when you're hauling rocks yeah. somewhere, yeah. but compared to what the underlying material is, it's a lot lighter. The densities are quite different.
And the way that works, say, on the San Andreas Fault, I can see that where they're coming like this and going down uh-huh. and over. But yeah. then on the San Andreas Fault, the way that must work, then the west side of the fault must be a microcontinent.
No, it's the Pacific Ocean. I mean, the Pacific Plate.
But I mean the land mass that is west of the fault. That is oh, San Francisco, Los Angeles, all of that.
Yeah.
Is that a microcontinent?
Yeah, it would be.
It was not originally part of the other piece.
No, it probably was. The slide I didn't show you, but it's actually easier for me to draw than do this. And this is really neat, I think. And I've never thought about it that way, but that is what you would call it now, in a sense. Before today, here's North America, this is North America. There was a spreading center right here, and it was west of all of North America, and actually South America too, okay? And so you had the subduction zone right all along here, and actually all west of North America. Now, this is true for South America today. But what happened in North America is actually North America overrode the spreading center. I mean, it really did. It actually moved over it. And it's unclear exactly what happened to it then. But if you go back and like look at some of those tectonic maps, you'll see that there's a spreading center that